Ms. Giovanni, I'm going to give Houston Tillerson University English major Kalea C. Tillman the honor of introducing you, and we'd like you to read two poems of your choice, and then after that, our journalist Alberta Phillips will take over. So I'm going to turn it over to Kalea.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hay. Again, good morning, everyone, and I have the honor of introducing the esteemed Miss Nikki Giovanni. For more than 50 years, Nikki Giovanni's poetry has dazzled and inspired readers. As sharp and outspoken as ever, she has published a new book of poetry and prose, Make Me Rain. In Make Me Rain, she calls attention to the injustice and racism, celebrates Black culture and Black lives, and gives readers an unfiltered look into her own experiences. Nikki Giovanni gained initial fame in the late 1960s as one of the foremost authors of the Black Arts Movement. Influenced by the civil rights and Black power movement of the period, her early work provides a strong militant African-American perspective, leading one writer to dub her the poet of the Black Revolution. A seven-time NAACP Image Award winner, Giovanni is the author of 28 books and the University Distinguished Professor of English at Virginia Tech. With great pleasure and respect, I present to you all, Miss Nikki Giovanni.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here and everybody's being proud of where they graduated, but I'm a proud Fisk University graduate. Make me rain. Turn me into a snowflake. Let me rest on your tongue. Make me a piece of ice so I can cool you. Let me be the cloud that embraces you, or the quilt that gets you dry. Snuggle close, listen to me sing on the windowsill. Make me rain on you. I love love poems. This is called Biography. There was a bat in Ecuador named Microdas Giovanni. Dr. Robert Baker named it after me. He discovered it while studying bats and thought the big ears were just like me. Maybe if the bat wrote it, she would be a poet. There was a plaque in Lincoln Heights where I went to school, and a plaque in Knoxville across the street from where my grandparents lived. I'm also lucky to have awards and daydreams, or is that daydreams and awards or night dreams? And I'm really lucky to be happy at what I do and how I do it. So this is a bio. I'm here, and if I missed on emotional soil, a weed will grow. Make me rain. Let me be a part of this needed change. Thank you. I really love that also because I've gotten into water lately, as you probably can tell. My last two books, Make Me Rain, but the book before that was A Good Cry, is dealing with water because we can live without food, actually, as many people know, but you can't live without water. And so I've gotten into what does water do? And I've been writing, of course, love poems because I'm a poet and poets write love poems. So thank you very much for inviting me to be a part of this celebration here.
Thank you, Nikki Giovanni. This is Alberta Phillips. And I have to say that this is a pleasure and an honor. Growing up in the late 1960s and early 70s, your poetry represented a coming of age for me and so many in my generation, and now my children. So it spoke to us, Nikki, as we transformed from Negro to Black. Remember that? Yeah. From conks to Afro hairstyles, from asking to demanding our civil rights, and from putting our hands together in a symbol of prayer to raising our fists and shouting Black power. And all the while, we were listening, reciting, and dancing to Nikki. That was one phase, just one phase of your wonderful career. Can you describe your other phases and share with us what phase you're in currently?
Well, I think I'm very fortunate. One, I recommend and enjoy old age. And people laugh about it because it's, oh, I don't want to, you know, everybody, I don't want to get old, but actually I'm enjoying it, and I hope that I get much older. I saw that today, which made me sad because I knew him, John Chaney, the coach at Temple University, passed. And we've lost a lot of good people. So, you know, it makes you sad, and you think, well, for me, I'm thinking, my God, you know, people that I know are passing, so this shouldn't be. But I like to cook, and I have a little fish pond out in the back of my yard, and they're the little cheap goldfish, little 39-cent goldfish, and they really are wonderful. I like to go out in the summer, or the spring too now, that, you know, you can sit out and have a glass of wine and watch the fish, and that's very nice. And I like to write, and I urge the young people to write that and to write their story, not to write the story that someone else wants them to write, but to write the story that means something to them. So two of the younger writers that I really adore are, of course, Renee Watson. I just love what she's been doing with her fiction, and Kwame Alexander. And I think that looking, I taught Kwame, and looking at what, for lack of a better word, I've been able to help produce, looking at some of the youngsters that I've taught and seeing how they're just going on. Yeah. It's really quite satisfying.
And I will say that you can see your influence throughout this generation of spoken word, because before that became a popular phrase, you were doing spoken word. The Last Poets were doing spoken word. To a large extent, Malcolm X was doing spoken word. So just want to throw that in there. So, I'm curious about, you mentioned your fish pond, and you kind of gave us a little insight into your life there, sitting out in nature and having that glass of wine. But I'm curious, because you appeal to so many people, and still do, in urban America. We came to love your voice because it did represent so many Black folks in urban areas, whether they were north, south, east, or west. But now you live and work in Appalachia. And that seems far from the Black experience. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Actually, I was born in Appalachia. And you can always tell who is here and who isn't. I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is right here in the middle. And coming back, I was recruited to Virginia Tech. And when I did, I was living with my mother. That's a bad line. My father had a stroke, and I was living in New York, building a career and a life. And my mother called me, phone rang one night, Mommy was on the phone, and she said, your father's in the hospital. Well, I didn't really care for my father. He was not a nice guy. And so I knew that if she was calling to tell me that, she wasn't telling me something about him. She was saying something about herself. Mm-hmm. And she said that your father's in the hospital. I thought, oh, we have to go home. And we being my son, Thomas, and my dog, Duke, and we all had to go home. And so we packed up the next day. I had a little Volkswagen, and we packed up. I was living, fortunately, in a good apartment, so being able to turn that over was not going to be difficult. And I went home, and I'm living with Mommy. Well, Mommy and I got along, because the one thing that Mommy understood about me, and the one thing I probably understood about her, is that I never like opinions. I still don't. I don't offer opinions, and I don't want them. I hate people that, well, if you want to know my opinion, well, if I want to know your opinion, I'll ask. So Amen. I don't ask and I don't give. So Mommy and I got along, and Gus died. My father died. And when he did, I used to just sit there. Mommy's a beer drinker. And Mommy sat there. We were sitting there one night drinking beer. And I said to Mommy, you know, you really should have married me. It would have been a different world if you had married me. And she laughed. She said, well, maybe if I had married you, how would I have gotten you? And I said, I don't know. You know, people, we would figure something out. But we lived together and got along. There were things that my mother was a dreamer, and there were things that she wanted. She always wanted to go to Paris. It was just one of her dreams. You know, you're sitting there talking to your mother, you know, middle of the night, and she's saying, you know, I always wanted to go to Paris. And I thought, well, yeah, that's easy. You have to get on a plane. And so I was able to take Mommy to Paris, and just some of the little things that you want to do for your mother that that generation should have some of their dreams come true, is what I'm saying crudely. But that generation worked very hard to make it possible for us. And so I thought, well, yeah, we can do that. But I got recruited to Virginia Tech. And when I read, I was always out on the road, and my mail is always piled up. When I read that letter, and it was from Virginia Fowler, and it said, you know, I'd like to offer you a job or recommend you for a job at Virginia Tech. And I went upstairs. My dad was downstairs there. I went upstairs and I said to Mommy, we've been offered a job at Virginia Tech. You want to go to Virginia? And she said, I want to go where you are. It doesn't matter. So then it works. And so we came here to Virginia. Mommy's passed now for 13 years. And, you know, there's still little things. You never get over missing your mother. But when Mommy passed, and people were very kind, they gave flowers, you know, and I'm one of those people. When I die, you will never see a line that says, you know, in lieu of flowers, send me my flowers, damn it. And so Mommy had a lot of flowers and they were nice. And I cut just a vine off of quite a few of them. And, you know, 13 years later, they're still living. My bedroom is almost a jungle because the vines have continued to grow. So it always makes me think my mother and actually my grandmother, whom I adored, are always with me. I can just go sit in my bedroom and just feel their spirit.
Thank you for sharing that, because it brings a lot of memories to all of us and about our mothers and appreciating our mothers and actually giving our mothers their flowers while they're here. And I had a wonderful opportunity to do that. So that warms my heart. It really does. My mother also wanted to see certain places, and you know, I brought her. She lived in New York. She moved to South Carolina, and then I brought her to Texas, to Austin, Texas, where we just did everything together. So I understand exactly what you mean when you say, well, why didn't I marry you? Because we had such a wonderful time. Just we got to the point where we were dressing alike, Nikki. We were ordering our clothes together. So yes, that's a beautiful thing. I also, Appalachia, just getting back to that, one more thing on that, is it a community that's welcoming to you? How do they take to Nikki Giovanni with the tattoo thug life on her arm and your really expressive voice? And how does that work?
I think it works because I am not asking anybody. So I'm not asking their permission to be me. And I want to be me and I'm happy. And I think a lot of what people do, period, is who you're talking to. And people that I talk to and that I know and who know me. And when I go into Kroger's, people know me, and they don't know my name necessarily. Oh, you're the woman that does that poetry. And I say, yes, ma'am. And, you know, because that's what I was taught. But I'm going to share this with you. I'm a Jeopardy fan. Or I used to be. I'm not doing Jeopardy anymore. And you know how Alex would be able to pronounce anything, some Greek letter, some Latin, whatever. And once he had a question on Appalachia, but he pronounced it. Oh gosh, I don't even know if I can mispronounce it. Appalachia. He couldn't pronounce it right. And we started laughing and said, oh, it's time that we send a note to, it's Appalachia. You know, Alex, it's Appalachia. Of course, we miss Alex. But I think that 90% of everything is learning to like who likes you. And everybody's not going to like you. And the reality is, you're not going to like everybody. And there's no reason to. So I'm comfortable where I am. It may be that one day one of those people that was breaking into the Capitol will decide, oh, we know where she lives, because knowing where I live is very easy. And we're going to go and we're going to break in and we're going to shoot her or something. Then I'll be dead. But between here and there, I'm not asking them. I'm not trying to make any sense out of them. They're crooks and they're cowardly, and I don't care to be bothered with them. And I think that one of the things that some people spend their time doing is trying to like people or trying to have people like them who don't like them. Everybody's not going, I mean, not even everybody. Some people you don't even want to like you. And you just need to, you need to go on about your business. When I did the interview a long time ago now with James Baldwin, it was so wonderful. And it was the first time that I really got Jimmy's attention because we talked about a lot of things. But then I finally said to him, you know, what bothers me? He was saying, I didn't know how difficult it is to be a Black man. And I said, you know, I'm a woman, so I do know how difficult it is to be a Black woman. I said, but you know, I think I called him Mr. Baldwin at that point. You go, Black men go out every day and smile at white men who don't like them and come home and hit and abuse Black women who are trying to love them, who are trying to make a home for them. So if they're going to lie about something, because we were talking about lies, if they're going to lie, they need to lie to that white guy because they need to come home and tell the truth to me, the Black woman. And so we had that, and you could see his face go, oh, I hadn't, it was one of those. If you saw Fences and the stamp this month, by the way, because every month there's a Black Heritage stamp. And the stamp this month is August Wilson. And if you remember Fences, and so you remember he comes in and he says to her, well, you know, I've had a hard time and I really need something to make me feel better. And she just finally looked at him and she finally said it. You think this is fun for me? And I thought, oh, thank God, somebody is finally, everybody is trying to build a life. And I think that what you have to be careful about is who you love and who you let love you. And so you're asking, am I comfortable? Well, yeah. If I'm walking down the street, is it safe? I don't know if it's safe or not, but I'm going to walk down the street because I have to walk down the street. And I registered to vote, which I hope everybody does, because that's how we put the jury together. And when we put the jury together, if they would ever let me, I've only been called white once and they won't let, they are not going to ever let me on the jury. But if they would ever let me on the jury, the white man that did something to the Black person is going to be guilty. I could go to sleep. I don't even have to hear it. He's guilty. And we know he's guilty. We know the people that shot Trayvon Martin. We know that they're guilty. We know the people that beat Emmett Till together are guilty. So I don't have a problem with that. I sign up to vote and I'm going to be on the jury. Somebody's going to be on the jury. And I hope it's me. And I hope it's somebody. And you have to do it. And what Donald Trump and them are trying to do now is discourage Black people from voting. After all we've gone through, they're trying to discourage, trying to say, well, it doesn't matter. We're going to take your vote away. I'm going to stand in line, which I did, because I went and voted for myself. And I'm going to stand in line just like the people in Atlanta did, the people in Detroit did. When I see the group of Black people and they said, no, we're going to stand in line. We're going to vote. We're not going to let you take that away from us. And I think that this is important. I think that things like that are important. So that's a long way of saying I'm happy.
I'm happy you're happy because the points that you've made about voting too, and not only just discouraging Black folks from voting, but now because of everyone has seen the power of the Black vote, and especially Black women in Georgia, they are trying to pass laws across this country to actually take the vote away from people of color. So I'm glad you brought that up. You mentioned, you know, the events at the Capitol and with the Trump supporters storming the Congress and with weapons and violence and all that we saw on television. But one of the things that I wonder about in terms of another event, maybe a contrasting event that happened was when at the inauguration of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, there was a young sister, Amanda Gorman, and she's the first youth poet laureate. And I'd like to know what you thought about, what you think about her and her work.
Oh, I thought that poem was terrific. And I would imagine, I I'm not good, as you heard me just holler, not you may not have. I'm not good with electronics, so people say you can roll it back. But I'm hoping that they put it, somebody puts it in a book, so that because for me, I have to read it. I thought that the poem was terrific, and I thought that she did an excellent job of clearly stating what was interesting and what was important. And I meant to mention Kamala Harris, because I'm so pleased that we now have a known Black woman as a vice president of the United States of America. I'm thrilled about that. But what also the riot at the Capitol reminded me of, I'm a history major, and what it reminded me of was the Tulsa, Oklahoma riot, where people came in. I thought that this is what it must have looked like, that these crazy white people came in and just killed, you know, 300-400 people. And I thought that was awful. But I, like all the old ladies, when I die, and I'm not looking to do that anytime soon, but when I do, I hope that I get a chance. I don't know, probably me, I'm not going to heaven because I hate so many people like Donald Trump and them. So I'm probably not going to make it to heaven. But I'm going to take a day. I'm going to get a day. And I'm going to go up and sit and talk to my mother and to Kamala, to all of the mothers, to all of the, to Fannie Lou Hamer. And I'm going to sit there and say, what you think about Amanda? Didn't she do her job? And she did. And I think all of us will sit there. I don't drink beer. I cook with it. But I think all of us will sit there. I'm going to have a glass of champagne. But mommy and them will be drinking their beer. And they'll be saying, yeah, she did her job. I think she did a wonderful job. So I was incredibly pleased.
Yeah, I think that she did as well. And she made us all proud. And, you know, you mentioned Kamala Harris and the first known Black person to become vice president, elected vice president in this country. And that didn't get away from me, Nikki Giovanni, because, you know, J.D. Rogers did write that book, Five Black Presidents. And, you know, I really believe that there are folks who have held those offices, but we don't really know their race because they were passing. So yes, I really appreciate the way that you stated that, and that was really great. I wanted to just let you know that, and a lot of people, because this surprised me. I belong to a nonprofit called My Own Library, and we organize when the coronavirus pandemic hit to help Black children improve their literacy skills, because now the kids were home and not so much in school. And we still have the situation where they're in school and they're not in school. But we had a generous benefactor, and we work with Houston Public Schools to buy a book a month for each student in schools we've adopted. And as you well know, April is National Poetry Month. And that is what led me to a line of books and poetry you have authored for children. And I was not aware that you had books for kids. So naturally, we will be getting your books for the students in grades K through 5. And if you ever want or need an audience of students to read to via Zoom or YouTube, I've got the kids for you. But tell me why you did decide to author children's books.
Well, of course, all stories start with children. And I'm still teaching, by the way, because I really love it. But I say to my students, I teach writing for a young audience, children's lit, kid lit. And I remind them that we all heard stories before we knew that. As we were, I said, the one thing everybody in this room has in common is that we were in a woman. This is how we were. And most of the women that we were in were going to touch their stomachs. They were going to touch that area, this child that was inside. And they were going to tell stories. They were going to say, you're all right. You're going to be wonderful. They were going to say something. They also, of course, were going to sing to them, because we all do. And when that child is born, and this is not against the men, believe me, it's not. But when that child is born, it's the mother and the grandmothers who sing the songs to them, who tell them the stories. So it only made sense that as I am was becoming a writer and proud to be so, I hope I'm doing a good job, but there were stories that just kept coming up that I wanted to share. I have a son, and now I have a granddaughter. And so I'm very, very lucky about that. But I wanted to share some of the stories that my grandmother shared with me. I didn't know my great-grandmother, whom we called Mama Dear. Mama Dear was the free child of slave parents. She was the first free person in our family. And so these are stories that you tell, despite the fact that the kid is too young to know that, but you keep passing that story along, like you are, I do, certainly. We're a Christian family, and so I would sing spirituals so that Thomas grew up hearing spirituals without knowing that they were spirituals. He didn't know what, he just knew his mother singing to him. And I can't sing, so you can imagine, you know, the pain he must be going through. Oh, she's singing again. But you sing to your child and you tell stories to your child. And I've been really, really fortunate to work with a wonderful man, Ashley Bryan. And Ashley has won every kind of illustration in the world. Ashley is 96 now. And Ashley agreed. Somebody asked him, one of my editors said, you know, would you work with Nikki? And he said, oh, he'd be, I was delighted because I never thought that Ashley knew who I was or cared. Ashley worked with me. I worked with him. His books are beautiful. The books, I'll send you one. Give me an address someplace and I'll send you one of our books because I have a couple. And I was lucky to work with Brian Collier. And I've been lucky enough to work with really good illustrators. And the first time I knew that James Baldwin would have any idea who I was, he was doing an interview such as I'm doing with you. And, you know, Jimmy lived in St. Paul Devance, and he had a tall fireplace. And at the top of the fireplace, turned toward him, facing him, was me for my book, Spin, A Soft Black Song. And I saw that and I thought, Jimmy Baldwin has read me. I mean, that was the first, like, oh my God, because everybody reads Jimmy. And yeah. it was an amazing thing. So yeah, you write and talk to children so that they carry their story. And I'm not a fan of, you know, how sad everything is. I'm not, and I said that, you know, I really hope no white person ever has cause to write about me because Black love is Black wealth. And I'm really glad that that line got taken. Black love is Black wealth. It's not, mm-hmm. if wealth was money, some of these other people would be sane and happy. So we know that wealth cannot be money. Wealth has to be something else. It has to be some level of love, some level of knowing you can depend upon this person. You can count on this person. And I just, I love that line. It's on a t-shirt too, but Black love is Black wealth. And I think sometimes the younger generation has forgotten. And so they've been competing for money. And you have to have money. I'm not a fool, but there's a limit. There is something called enough. And you have to know where you have reached enough and when you're going to move forward. So I'm very proud of your library. And as I say, sincerely, when we finish this, you'll send an address. I can't do these things. I should learn how, but right now I haven't. And I'll send you some books with Ashley and me. And if I have Ryan and me, I'll send, you know, just so the kids can have one. Ryan and I did history. Ashley and I did love songs. So it's really nice. Yeah.
And that would be great. Do you have any quick recommendations for the kids' books that you think? I know the Harriet Tubman book was really great. So we're going to select that one for sure. But I don't know if there are others that you might that are close to you in your heart.
Well, actually, the children's book that I love best, and that's the truth, is called Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Men. And it's a wonderful story because it shows what community does and what courage does and how Mrs. Frisbee's husband dies. And we don't know how until halfway through the book. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but we don't know how he died. But he was a brave and wonderful man. So they're mice. Mrs. Frisbee is a mouse and the rats are rats. And, you know, mice and rats don't get along. Yeah. And in order to save both of them, they have to come together. That's my favorite book. I read it and reread it and reread it. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many times, because it starts with little Timothy is sick. And we've all had a sick child. And when you, your kid is sick, you do whatever it's necessary to do in order to get the medicine that that child needs. So I love the book, and I love the way that they function together. I just love it so much. So, but also a book that, and it may surprise you, that again is wonderful, is Pooh Bear, Christopher Robin and Pooh Bear. These are, and you might say, well, you know, come on, Nikki, these aren't Black books. Well, there's more to being Black than meets the eye. And what you're wanting your youngsters to do is to look at the courage of the young people and the love they have. And so Christopher Robin loved Pooh Bear, but he's going to have to give Pooh Bear up. Some of us have brothers or sisters or mothers or fathers who are drug addicts or who are in jail. And they're going to be just like Christopher Robin and Pooh Bear. There's going to be a day that they're going to have to say, I have to give you up because I have to go forward. And that's it. Pooh Bear says to Christopher Robin, well, why do you have to leave me? And he says, because I have to, they won't let me stay a child. I have to grow up. And he does, but that doesn't make him a fool.
Right.
And some of these books that we think about, and that's a classic, and it's an absolute wonderful, I mean, you read Pooh Bear and you just cry. When Christopher Robin, Pooh Bear says, I will always be here. And, you know, tears run down because everybody needs to know somebody will always be there.
Yeah. And before we let you go, what advice, you are teaching and you're a professor at Virginia Tech. What advice can you give to our young people about the craft of writing?
The main thing that I would say about the craft is that you have to use your voice and you have to decide what your story is. Because there are things that you're interested in that people will say, well, you're Black, you should be talking about slavery. And that's just not what you're really interested in. You really want to talk about space or something. I don't know. But I know you have to believe in yourself. And I say that again to my students. We, last semester, we did a book together, by the way, and it's called My Favorite Toy. And I asked them because we obviously school was going to close down because of the COVID. And so I said to my students, well, let's just do one thing. We're going to make a book and we're going to call it My Favorite Toy. Well, I had two students that said, we did the book, but I don't have a favorite toy. I didn't like toys. And so they were saying something else. But it was good for them to be able to write it down. They didn't have to pretend, oh, I loved Barbie doll. They could say, I didn't. And someone said why he didn't. And that's his business. It's in the book. He gave it for the book. But I think some things like that, sometimes you have to allow yourself. I talked to Sabrina Fulton, who was Trayvon Martin's mother. And she said, she is sad. It was like you're talking to me. She said, yeah, sometimes she's sad, but sometimes you have to find joy. And I thought that was so wise of her, because losing your child is probably the worst thing that can happen. And to lose Trayvon, somebody shooting him in the back, and her saying, but you still have to find some joy. And you do. Otherwise, two lives are lost. Yeah. And I thought she's such a smart woman.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that because I was very touched by your Virginia Tech poem after the tragedy in 2007 about finding joy. Part of that was one of the lines in the poem, and that was just really a beautiful, beautiful poem. And it did bring the campus together. In fact, it brought the nation together because it helped us make sense out of that tragedy. And so the power of your writing, from children's books to spoken word to love. And you had one quote that I found and I really enjoyed. We love because it's the only true adventure. And this whole thing about Black love equals Black wealth. And I don't think people really, and especially white people, and I don't want to call them out, but I don't think they understand fully about Black love, because we can come from the poorest of poorest homes and still feel wealthy because of Black love that we have from from our big mamas, our mothers, our mind dears, as they say in Texas. You said mother dear, but we say mind dear here in Texas. So yeah, I think that all of those are just wonderful. And I think that we're being encouraged to move to the Q&A now. Is that right, Hopeton?
As always, someone should be telling me, unmute, Hopeton, unmute. Yeah, we haven't received any questions yet, but I do want to let the audience, if you have any questions, go ahead and put them in the Q&A box. And I do have a question for you, Nikki. Have you been inspired since the inauguration of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? Have you been inspired recently to write some new poetry?
I hate to answer this because it'll sound really bad, but no, I've gotten, you know, I'm a Delta. And so I have been enjoying talking to my sorors, and we've been talking back and forth because Kamala is an AKA. And I keep saying, well, I want to hear her speech that she says, you know, we owe it to the Deltas. Because if you recall, the AKAs, there was only one sorority. It was at Howard University. It was the AKA. Susan B. Anthony wanted to go march, it was a group of Black women that said, well, we want to march. And they went to Susan B. Anthony and she said, you can march. It was a fight going on. She said, you can march, but you have to march in the back. And most of the people who remained AKAs, Alpha Kappa Alphas, said, we don't want to march in the back. We want to march with the rest of them. And the 19 women who became the Sisterhood of Delta Sigma Theta said, it doesn't matter where we march. It's more important that we do. And so that group became Delta. If Delta Sigma Theta had not done that, the AKAs would not now have a vice president of the United States. So I am hoping that I get invited to the White House so that I can wear my white and red. I have a tie that I really love, my Delta Sigma Theta tie. I am hoping that I get invited so that I can wear my Delta tie. I don't know if that's an inspiration. I think I'm too old to be inspired like that, but I want to wear my Delta Sigma Theta tie.
So we do have a question in the chat. Love everything you said. Now your writings always, and especially love your beautiful smile. And then we also have a question here. How can we cultivate Black love if we're single / estranged from our family?
Well, that's what we were talking about just earlier. It's why I want the kids to read Pooh Bear. Being estranged from your family only means that probably you're not getting along with the people who birthed you or something. Family is your decision. And I think that you have to make a decision. There are people who you love, there are friendships that you're making, and there's a family that you built. We're looking now, because I love it so much, just like third time I'm looking at it, because I'm a history major, but we're looking at Downton Abbey. And at one point, Mrs. Hughes says to Mr. Carlson, you know, you have so much invested in Downton Abbey. This, you know, you treat it like it's your family. And Carson looks up at her and says, it's the only family I have. And I always love that. Julian Fellowes wrote it. He wrote Downton Abbey. But I thought he did a beautiful job, because people sometimes will say to Black Americans, you know, why do you love America? This is not your home, but it's the only home we have. In my opinion. And I'm sorry you're estranged from your family right now. I would urge you, if I could, I don't know you, to continue to keep your heart open to let other people, because the people that you're estranged from right now, I don't know why you're estranged from them either, but you can't let that be on your shoulders. That's someplace else. In 10 years, it may all change, but you say you're single, but nobody is single. There's some people there. Right now, you're busy saying, this is what I've lost. And I would say, I'm 77 years old, as a 77-year-old woman, I would say, hey, how about looking for what you have found, for what you're bringing together? You're, you know, Alberta, you're sitting there. I don't know if this person is in Houston or something, but there are volunteers. There are people, and there are children, and there are, and I'm a dog. You probably heard my dog at the beginning. I'm a dog person, and there are life forms that need you. Volunteer some time for a dead, for a dog, or for a kid, or from an old person. You saw in the paper, and that was really touched me. I'm sure you saw in Chicago where the mail woman, because you know they delivered the mail, thank God, by pushing it, and she had noticed finally that the mail hadn't been picked up in 3 days. And she went and called 911 for her, the mail, and her next door neighbor came and saved that woman's life because the woman had fallen and couldn't get up and couldn't respond. And everybody said to her, she's in on Lester Holt, and he was saying to her, "Well, you're a hero." And she said, "No, and that's what you like about Black people, Alberta." She said, "No, this was a blessing to me that I was able to help that person." You have to love Black people. She can consider saving that old lady's life a blessing. You have to love that. And there is somebody who has fallen, who needs you. Go find that person.
And that's an example of Black love equating to Black wealth. The postal worker who had the love in her heart for her people, and she could see that something was wrong. And that's really beautiful. Hope, and I think there's another question from Stephen Brown to Nikki Giovanni. How's your view changed since the Baldwin interview in regards to what the modern Black woman wants to hear from her man?
Well, I guess, again, he's not hers. So we can start
there. Love that.
Yeah, you know, you have to. And I think that, you know, I was giving a speech. My son was there and he said, "God," I said, "I shouldn't have been there." Something had come up. And I said, "You know, I get tired of people talking about how big Black men's penises are, because no woman ever fell in love with a man because of the size of his penis. We fall in love with them because of the size of their heart." And I think that what anybody wants to hear from anybody is some kind words. Some, you know, I love The Godfather. It's one of my favorite movies, because you remember when Vito, Godfather Part Two, when Vito is trying to find a way, because he loses his job, but he stops on the way home and picks up a pear so that he can take it to his wife. They're married, they're Kathy, he's married. And he wants to give her a pear because he wants to say, "I love you." And I just think, we have to stop and think, who do we love and how do we show it? It doesn't always have to be something big. It can be something as wonderful as, "I saw this apple and it costs a dime. I was in Kroger." And apples don't cost a dime anymore. I think apples cost about 90 cents. But you see this apple and you take it to this woman you're courting, or this girl, you know, I don't know your age either. And you say, "I got this for you." That's going to get you a whole lot more than a lot of things you're thinking. Because you were thinking, you were there, and you had this apple, and it was beautiful, and you thought, "I thought about you." Why can't we be kind to each other?
Gets back to your flowers. Give her flowers. Hopton?
And thank you very much, Nikki Giovanni. It has been a pleasure, absolute pleasure, to have you as part of the 5th Annual Celebration of Diverse Literary Voices. And thank you, the esteemed, incredible journalist, Alberta Phillips, for conducting what was really a very, very, very good interview.